Daytime Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, Austin and Carrie return to Days of Our Lives. Will and Axie finally get married on General Hospital. Bill makes Brooke an offer on The Bold and the Beautiful. And Glory's making The Young and the Restless great again. All this and much more on today's show, so stay tuned. Welcome.
The change in me is you now. I never thought that I would love someone as much as I love you.
Okay, do we have the money to pay for the rights to that?
I was alone in a drift until I found you. Yes, y'all, today
you
is the anniversary.
I don't know that song.
Of NBC canceling my Santa Barbara.
Shit.
So that was a brief melody. It was medley, not a melody. A medley of the great love songs of Cruz and Eden, Mason and Julia, and Warren and that silly BJ and that silly cap on her wedding day.
Well, you were alone and adrift on soap opera message boards until I found you, Jamie, and what is it, 10 years later, 11 years later?
I'm sorry, but that does not compare to Santa Barbara in my life.
Okay. Jillian Bowe, welcome.
I'm just kidding. It does, Luke. You're the Lionel to my Cece.
Mike Jubenville, welcome.
I'll just start with a how do.
Okay.
Wait, hold up. Oh, never mind.
My arch nemesis.
Chip is the dead one. Gotcha.
Who lives next door and whose wife cooks pigeons. I don't know. No, you're more like the, who are you? You're not the, you're kind of the, I'm Julia. You're the Gina to my Julia.
I don't know what that means, but okay.
I don't know what that means either.
I'm not alone.
When he has dissociative identity disorder. And
you are the one who was admitting on Twitter that you're bipolar, not me.
I said I might be. I haven't been diagnosed. I just think that my therapist has been wrong all these years because they just keep giving me
airtime. And I loved how on Twitter that tweet was, you basically made it sound like you were the one who offered up bipolar in the way you wrote it. And it was the way the conversation actually went was, Jamie, I might be Luke bipolar.
And then I didn't even get to finish the phrase.
Didn't even get to finish the phrase. And he makes it sound like he suggested it. And I was like, I knew what he was going for before he even said it. It was like,
You knew that kind of history when we were talking about all my children families. Maybe my polls would be a little more singular.
Okay. So, Jamie, what are you thinking of Austin and Carrie being back in Salem?
I love it. You know, I'm the rare fan. I see a lot of people saying that they prefer Patrick Muldoon's Austin.
I was going to say it's the good Austin.
I watched them both. And look, I loved Patrick Muldoon back in the day, you know, even after he broke up Zach and Kelly on Saved by the Bell and stuff, you know, I loved him for the setup of that story. But it's one of those situations, like, for me, you know, I always hear about how, you know, there was this other Vicky Lord before Slazak. For me, you know,
I don't know her.
People saying, oh, I wish it was the real Austin. If somebody's been in a role 10 years, it's kind of jarring to go back to the. So when they came back that last time and it was Patrick Muldoon.
Oh, that was just painful. And he had forgotten how to act.
It wasn't that for me. I don't think Patrick Muldoon is the stronger actor. I'm sorry. He is. Austin Peck is more for me. And this is shallow. The aesthetic that I want for Austin, because he's the one that I totally can imagine Sammy and Carrie trying to tear each other off the bone for. And, you know, that's shallow and that's awful to say, but, you know, he's more, for me, aesthetically appealing. And look, I'm not a soap actor, so I know how hard it is to, nobody can stay in 1990 3. None of us can, but, you know, I'm very happy to see him back. You know, I just, as long as, you know, here's the deal, because, you know, we are in this age where these people can reveal who they really are on the social media. Look, I prefer Austin Peck's Austin because he's the one I have the best memories of and stuff. But he need to not comment on politics right now, because else I'll be writing wishful storytellings about his death, I'm sure. Because, you know,
it will take 9 months for it to happen, if anything, dude.
Well, that's true. That's true. But I'm glad to have him back. And Christy Clark got her first scene with Leanne Hunley in 30 years. I didn't even realize this because, you know, I guess it just skipped my mind that Andrea Barber was the, you know, that was the original Carrie who went
on
Kimmy Gibbler on Full House. And then by the time Christy Clark came on, Anna was on her way out because Leanne Hunley skyrocketed to primetime fame on Dynasty and Lucky Chances, the Jackie Collins miniseries, and went on to seduce Pacey on Dawson's Creek. So they were kind of like two ships passing in the soap opera night. And so now they're, you know, finally getting to actually play out mother-daughter. It's so funny because in those early years of Christy Clark's time on the show, they talked about Anna so much and her abandoning Carrie and that I guess I just, when a fan tweeted me, you know, this is their first scene in 30 years, I was like, really? It just didn't feel, I was like, I thought they had scenes, but they didn't. So this is monumental.
Well, touching back on Austin for a second, I would agree with you in terms of his acting if it was pre-As the World Turns, because pre-As the World Turns, all Austin Peck was a pretty face. But post As the World Turns, I think that his, like, As the World Turns was where Austin Peck came into his own as an actor, and he improved a lot in terms of being able to convey emotion and some depth. So
yeah,
post As the World Turns, I think that his acting is at least as decent as Patrick Muldoon.
But here's the deal about that, you know, and this always has to be, I mean, he wasn't required to be an actor during James Riley's
exactly.
He was required to be really stupid and be really pretty and to basically my grandmother had a fit when they did that storyline. Not for the reason she should have had a fit, which is the fact that Sammy raped Austin. That's the thing that people gloss over in this genre. I get into more fights every day about Franco and Liz and this one and that one. And I'm like, hey, soap fans, do you know how many of your favorite vixens and heroines are rapists too? Sammy Brady, Chelsea Lawson. Anyone who's ever drugged a man and climbed up on the pole is a rapist too. In real life, they're rapists too. So if we start really kicking this genre apart about rape, Sammy raped Austin. But yeah. I digress. But, you know, my grandmother wasn't horrified like she should have been about the fact that Sammy took pills and drugged Austin and had sex with him. She was mortified at the thought that he was that stupid, even though I'm yelling at her, he was roofied! It ain't no drug powerful enough in the world that's gonna make that man believe that curvy girl is that bony girl he been hunting on. Now, I'm not gonna sit here and believe that he can't tell the difference between curvy, big boo, big behind Sammy and skinny little Carrie in the bed. He knew the difference between them women. He wanted to go to bed with Sammy, and you couldn't tell her otherwise, even though I'm like, you see her stealing these drugs to give this man. But he didn't. He was like, I don't know how I slept with Sammy. And, you know, that's all he was really required to do, and take off his shirt.
Big boo, big butt. Your grandmother
Sammy was voluptuous. And
yeah,
you
gotta do it like that. Your grandma.
You know, don't you go there. You know how mamas talk at home, because you done told me how Miss Bo talked at home.
he was
not required to be a thespian on that show. And, yeah, he definitely did come into his own. As the World Turns.
Mike, what did you think of Austin Peck being back on Days of Our Lives, having watched him on As the World Turns? And what are you thinking of Marlene in Prague?
Okay, that's two questions. But I don't really care which Austin shows up, because for me, the money is Carrie and Anna. So I didn't have an attachment to either Austin. But I'm okay with Austin Peck because, like you said, he did improve on As the World Turns. And the last time Patrick was on, it wasn't really what I expected.
It was painful.
Let's just be real. Karen needs to come home divorced, and Rourke Cricklow's Mike Horton needs to be in town on a medical case at the same time. Bada bing, bada boom. Who cares about Austin and Carrie at this point? By the moment she looked at Mike Horton and they screwed on that magic carpet in the air, gliding through time and space, it was all over for Austin and Carrie anyway. Mm-hmm. Mike and Carrie. Team Mike and Carrie. Mike, tell us about Marlena in Prague.
I love Marlena in Prague that looks like Salem PD. They're like sister cities. But anyway, no, so, Anna right, and Marlena were...
I love y'all. Y'all is trying to give us an old school 80s adventure. I know y'all ain't got no money. I'm applauding y'all for trying. Y'all done repurposed them sets to make it look like Europe. And if I squeeze my eye, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it, y'all. Go ahead.
I love the scenes with Marlena and Anna and her being a part of this whole... This is what I like about Days Right Now. All these... characters are coming together toward one central story. You know, you can see it with what's going on in Prague. You can see it what's going on in Salem. So I kind of like the umbrella that's starting to close tight together. And I kind of feel like the microchip is kind of involved in all this. And in Day's style, hopefully everybody will all come together for one big explosive outcome with this whole thing. And that's kind of what I'm seeing with this right now. So I'm enjoying it. I thought Anna was my laugh riot. I laughed out loud a lot this weekend watching her.
Jillian, Chloe woke up. What do you think of Nancy being back and Chloe being awake?
Boy, for someone who was in a coma, that bitch be looking too, like, beat, don't she? I'm like...
Nadia Bjorlin is always flawless.
She just came out that coma like, ooh. I'm like, okay, girl.
Somebody says she opened her eyes like Jon Snow, but I wouldn't know that. I never watched it.
I don't know her. I love Nancy being in cahoots with Chloe. Like, Nancy, last week when Brady was trying to, like, get access to stuff, Nancy was like, I got your tick for your tack and your toe, bitch. Like, she was just blocking him like a mug. And I loved that Nancy is cloaking her daughter's sins, but she's also keeping it real with Chloe, telling her, look, girl, you don't want Deimos after you for the shit that you pulled with Nicole. You better tell her first before someone else does, or else that's your ass. And I'm cool with that. I just don't, like, my thing is, I don't understand why Chloe is acting like judge, jury, and executioner with that girl's baby. That's your home girl. Like, give her baby back. She's acting as though, like, if she gives the baby over to Nicole because she's with Deimos, Deimos is going to, like, harvest her kidneys. Like,
and it's a little silly with that regard that she's so afraid of the threat of Deimos. She knows Nicole. Nicole is now her best friend, but she was not always her best friend.
She not
is
at
the
all.
Woman who put a flesh-eating bacteria on Chloe's face. So if she's okay to give a baby to Nicole, she should be okay to give a baby to Deimos. She knows that Nicole, or does she know, that Nicole was trying to fry Victor's ass in that water that time and frame Marlena. You know, so it's like, that's the one thing I'm not enjoying about the story is Nicole being a sad sack. Before
She's
Nicole
been a sad
got
sack
baby
ever...
rabies.
I'm so disappointed with what they've done with Nicole.
Yeah,
and it's been for years.
Before she got baby rabies, Nicole was a fun, cocktail-swilling, snark
made
monster.
Things happen.
The last time that I truly enjoyed Nicole was the baby switch storyline with Sammy. That was the last time for me, and just the having the Nicole that I knew and loved, that was the last time she was there for
me. Oh, I liked her with Eric. I liked her when she was being his little, when they did that little ripoff of Richard Chamberlain, the Thornbirds, when she was sitting there lusting for Father Eric.
Yes.
Wanting to put her hands down beneath his frock.
But it never went really anywhere well fast.
Make him rise on the third day.
Well, speaking of which, Greg Vaughn's going to be back next week. You looking forward to that?
I am.
I'm down with that. You know, he's going to give me, he's gonna like whet our appetite, so to speak, until him gonna call it Greenleaf. Oh, sorry, Queen Sugar comes back because he is so badass in Queen Sugar. I love it.
I'm not. I want to like Queen Sugar, but it's just a little plotting. Oh! I want to like it. You know, I want to support. I'm putting my fist pound up, but I need a little more soap and a little less.
Oh, get your
so,
life.
Jamie, you know,
I'm just tired of all of the. I feel like I need a notepad and an encyclopedia.
Stop,
to learn something every day.
Jamie, you know.
No, I've, you know.
Okay, then if you watch the entire season, your mind will change. I'm telling
I
you.
I hope so, because, like, the last time I looked, it was scene after scene about, you know, I don't know. I'll just say this about Queen Sugar very briefly, then we'll go back to Days. For me, when I read it, I thought, ooh, we're going to get a Black Falcon crest. I didn't know there would be scene after scene of talking about, like, the, you know, Dallas and Falcon Crest gave us the overview of the industries that they were in, but they didn't. I didn't have to learn about seed structure. And
this is why I say to you, you need to watch it.
I don't
want
to know about
Falcon Crest. No. You need to watch it. Hold up. You need to watch it all because all that comes into play as the season progresses.
You know, that's the thing with peak TV for me. You need to. It didn't take me 5 episodes to love Empire. It took 1, and I was there. You know, if I'm 5 episodes in, now I did like the story about the nasty basketball husband. Now that doggone all them scenes about them which strand of sugarcane is needing to be planted. Angela Channon didn't talk about all that with the grapes. She just said, Lance, I want you to go sabotage Chase's order. That's what I like, you know.
Jamie, you know that sound that you just made about Queen Sugar, that well, that's what I thought when I read that Lamont Archie was coming to Days of Our Lives as Eli.
Oh, leave him alone, because he already met. That's because I picked a bad picture. But the
wait. Hey, Matt, because you picked a bad picture.
No, he tweeted. Okay, here's the thing about all of y'all actors, any of y'all who are listening, if you don't like the pictures we post, that is the license we have. So you need to go with whoever you allow to take a picture of you and tell them you don't like the picture. But
what did he say?
Somebody tweeted, is that the best picture y'all could have found of him? And he retweeted it. And I'm like, oops, I'm sorry. Hell, you need to, when somebody say cheese, open your eyes up. It's not my fault.
Well, I just hope that his acting is proof since the Young and the Restless.
I don't think he was that bad. You're still a damn Adler today, ain't you? You sitting up here. Hated it. Whatever.
I know.
I haven't said anything about hating anything. Lamont Archie, but
Lamont Archie was Luke, quit acting like you brand new to daytime. Ain't nobody on here trying to act like it's a masterpiece theater. Everybody ain't Beverly McKenzie and Erica Slezak and Kim Zibble. All he needed to do on Why Not was show his titties, and he did that well. That's all they brought him on there to do. That's all Angelica did. Were tried at that point of that show was for eye candy. Remember the promos? We're bringing sexy back. That's all they wanted him for. So that's what he did. He came on there and was like, Hillary, I'm gonna help you Eva Blog. The winters.
Mike?
I mean, that's all he was required to do. What about that is like, you're like, he should never be allowed to work in television.
You never heard me say that. Mike, speaking of showing titties, did Steffi show hers this last week on The Bold and the Beautiful?
Oh my God.
She had to ask Papa if she could have permission to show hers.
Yeah, no, I don't know what Steffi was doing this weekend. I think she needs to get rid of those boys. Thomas had the best line when he walked in the office and said, wow, and looked at the door and said, oh, some things have changed. Then he looked at Wyatt and Liam and said, some things never change. And it's like, that's exactly right. It never changes. She is strong enough. She doesn't need any one of those, either one of those clowns.
Change. It just changes days, darling. But it's the same thing, different day.
Yep. So, no, I just B&B is just painful to watch. And it's so nice and so refreshing to see that RJ is pestering his parents to get married because that's really all that matters. Well,
there's
meanwhile,
no smack in LA, obviously, or whatever.
Okay, here's a legit thing.
Be a teenager, go
to
find
Los
smack.
B&B has had the advantage of using a real city to be its setting, which a lot of soaps didn't do. So it should be like Sex and the City or Bloodline, where their environment is a big part of the story so that you get a feel for California, Southern California. I mean, yeah, they have the outdoor shots, and yes, they do all this stuff, but, you know, these boys live in a vacuum. And
well, you mentioned that you make a perfect segue because the Bells live in a bubble in L.A. I mean, let's just be real. From the moment they moved to L.A., they were already wealthy. And if you look at the creation of The Young and the Restless and the creation of Bold, even though Bold tried to give us both sides by setting the Logans in the Valley and the Forresters in Bel Air, you can if you look back at the early days of Y&R, which I've only seen on YouTube and have read about, Bill was, since he was a lot closer to having been, you know, he was still closer to his middle class roots when he created Y&R, and that really shows in how, you know, there was that division. I mean, Bold and the Beautiful is told from the point of the view of very wealthy white people who live and only intermingle among other very wealthy white people. There is no...
Every once in a while, they get on their pet project for the homeless,
yeah,
which is great.
And it's,
you know,
and it's,
but...
it's very much like, I hate to say it, it's because that's not their politics, actually, but they have a Trumpian view of when they want to do a social story, which right. is, oh, okay, we want to have black people. They need to be homeless. Always. Yep. They must always be homeless.
I get that.
And we must give them their homes. And then we must screw them because we've now made them screwable because they're no longer street urchins. And then Stephanie has to tell them, you are all my people and I'm going to give you adrenal disease by giving you a coffee shop. And then they disappear until the next time that they're being really, really hammered about a lack of diversity. And so then they'll bring black people on again. And then they'll have the black patriarch and matriarch of that family live in a motel hotel Holiday Inn set for a year.
They don't even get a La Quinta.
You know, it's like, come on. Bold, you're right. Mike is absolutely right. And there are so many shows in this space right now. TV Land has Younger, which is it's in New York City, but Bravo has Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce, and these are both very frothy, glitzy Sex and the City airs that tell the that, you know, like Mike is saying, that borrow from the real life tapestry of their industries. Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce is set in the world of a self-help author. So there's all this real discussion of the real, you know, she blogs for the Huffington Post. She does this, she does that. Why, you know, I mean, and it's not that hard to reach out to fashionista.com and say, you know, and let Bill get pissed off when he learns what? Steffi's going to be featured in a, you know, she's going to do a sponsored blog post for fashionista.com. There's so many things like that that they could do now that they have Wyatt spouting out social media statistics every 5 minutes. That's not, you know.
Or they could have, like, I just thought of it. FITM is based in LA. They could have like a little internship program with that school, you know, that's fashion, merchandise, and design. You know, that goes hand in hand. They could, you know, if B&B was smart, they would approach that school and say, listen, we want to borrow some of your students. We want them to do like an internship thing. They provide us clothes. We'll give them a mock fashion line. They'll get publicity on our show. Bada boom, bada bing for
they
jewelry.
They should like really immerse like, themselves into the real LA fashion scene. Right, and they should bring on real LA fashion designers and make them rivals to,
that's
you
what
know.
I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, for the college kids, like, you know, what is that boy? That what's RJ is what, 15? He could have like a crush on like, you know, a college kid or something like that, and the college kid be using him in order so that they could become a Forrester designer, or so that their shit could be shown at the Forresters or something like that.
Well,
you know,
see, back in the day, Rick and Bridget both had lives. They weren't just there. Yes, they wanted, you know, they did that same "we want our mom and dad back together" BS, but they had lives.
Right,
Rick, you know, had the whole Amber storyline. Bridget had the Deacon storyline. Now it's like they only bring on these kids to exist to try to reunite their parents. Brad is in such a plot-driven, derivative circle of a drain. He's circling the drain with these plots right now, and none of the characters feel authentic anymore. Quinn, who is supposed to be more manipulative and smarter than anyone else, is being manipulated by the big dope Ridge. Mm-hmm. Ridge was always just the pretty Forrester. When was he ever the smart manipulative?
I really thought that it was going to be a situation where Quinn was going to bust him and be like, "You don't think I knew what you was doing, bitch?" And for her to blackmail him and say, "If you don't stop your shit, I'm going to show your father and destroy."
Well, and then they've done this story again. You know, we've talked about it before. They did the same story. They did it during a location shoot where all the Forresters got together and thought it would be a good idea to have Ridge pretend to love Brooke again so that they could bust up Brooke and Thorne. Brad is recycling all of his old stories. He has nothing for Heather Tom to do, so he affixed her to this story and has made her Gladys Kravitz from Bewitched. You know, she's running around trying to – her whole focus in life, you know, you're a divorced woman with a – what did her settlement – wasn't it $50 million? You know, why aren't we seeing stories about Katie getting on Tinder? That would be such a fun story where both Katie and Dollar Bill, you know, he finally realizes, "Hey, forget Brooke, I'm done." And the boys tell him, "You know, Dad, you know, you should get on a dating app." He's like, "That's for losers. I go out and pick up women at bars. That's what men do." And then, you know, in the quietness of the night, he's drinking his scotch and he's like, "You know what? What the crap?" And then he logs on to Tinder and is doing it. And then cut over to Katie's house. She's, you know, well, she can't sip wine because they made her alcoholic. They made everyone alcoholics on that show. But, you know,
they'll still sip wine again.
You know, but she's, you know, she's on there and she decides to get, and they get on Tinder and then they end up, well, I don't even know how Tinder works. Like, no, you can see each other's face on Tinder.
Well,
so
maybe
make it one that you don't get to see the person's face
right
away.
Right.
And, you know, and then they fall back, you know, just something other than this faux relationship with Eric and using dialogue to set up a relationship that was never. That's my biggest pet peeve with Brad. And I'll say this, everybody, that's why I try to defend Gene and Shelley, because I don't think there is an equitable balance of criticism in soap opera. Because if Gene and Shelley were rewriting history that we saw on air for General Hospital the way that Brad does for Bold and the Beautiful, there would be anarchy.
It has been, remember?
You know, and they have, but they don't do it that much.
Remember,
you know,
when Jason got his memory, like, was starting to get his memory back, and Robin came to town, and he was like, "Why did I ever break up with you?" And she was like, "It was because of Sonny Chow."
You know, and it went back to Ron, too, when Ron was there. When Ron got – Frisco sang the wrong song to Felicia.
Oh my God.
I will never forget that day on Twitter as long as I live. People wanted to they wanted to find that man in the streets of New York and stone him because Frisco sang somebody named Tanya song. It was over. But Brad sits there and says – has Eric – puts the lines in Eric's mouth. "Brooke and I were very happy and together with our two children, and Ridge came along." That's not what happened. He does it all the time. "Katie, I've always had this crush on Eric. You know, we've always been so close." Really? When? Where?
Not for nothing, but when it comes to fandoms, for me, Bold and the Beautiful fandom doesn't even rank in comparison
to... Well, they don't get as angry. They make
hilarious.
Yeah,
I mean, you're comparing them against,
like,
General Hospital
fans.
But no,
but it's not just about General Hospital fans. It's about us, and I say us, the collective soap criticism blogger world. Luke, I will say that Luke has been mad at B&B for years. Mike, too. But it's like, I'm sitting here like, come on! They whitewashed their entire canvas, got rid of all the Negroes, the transgender storyline, everything, and went back to telling the same repetitive... Yes, it's beautiful, the sets are beautiful, but you cannot... Well, yes, you can, because everybody has a right to their opinion, and they have a right to theirs. But I'm like, seriously? We watch this show every day. We're all watching this show every day. They say the same lines. It's gotten so bad that you don't have to watch. They say the same things, especially poor Scott Clifton. He doesn't even have...
I've been saying this for years.
But it has not been that bad.
No, the last... It's been worse. I have to mute him when he's on. I love you, Scott Clifton, but when Liam is on, I go on mute and read the closed caption.
Eric, Ridge, I'm going to lose Steffi. I've got a plan. I've got a plan, Trebek. It's like that's all we're
And then next week they're going to have like Katie and Eric get a little closer. I'm sorry. Katie would not be trying to go after someone that boned her mom and her two sisters.
Well, yes, she would. I'm not going to say that she wouldn't, because yes, she would, because she shows through that dust at Jack Webb.
But Jack did not bone her mother. I think
he boned her auntie or her niece.
I think Katie has a lie there. I think that's kind of gross.
I don't think any of the Logans have lines, and I don't think Eric has a line. But it's Eric not organic.
If they showed a moosh boosh, Eric will talk that.
I would still think it was gross. But the Logans and the Forresters have no boundaries anymore. Eric will try to screw Marcus. He smells a Logan and he's like, that's a Logan I haven't had yet. But it's just the fact that they're creating this false dialogue to act like it's always been. Why did it have to be, oh, we've always had this connection? Why couldn't it just be, you know, Eric kind of looking good to me and I got a daddy complex? I mean, instead of
Or he gave her a shoulder to lean on, like when Bill was being a dick, trying to force her into signing his agreement. He came in and be like, that's enough.
Goes to show how far this show will go to keep Katie away from some black penis. Because Carter is over there with the bluest balls on the planet. He ain't had no love. It's like in Vogue. He ain't never gonna get it. But y'all gonna put y'all gonna put two hot, sexy women on Eric Forster. Come on, man. Come on, man. Y'all ain't doing nothing with Carter. Look, I'm gonna be real. Zenday is single. Katie is a divorced woman. Zenday is like, please take me back, little girl with them culottes on, them little short shorts. And she's like, no, nigga, go with you no more, because you hurt my sister. I'm going to keep wearing these culottes to the office place. And so he and Katie could be at a bar and be like, hey, Katie, you know, that would be a throwback to the fans of The Young and the Restless, because, you know, remember when Malcolm danced with Victoria Newman when she was Victoria? Fans lost their minds. The show chickened out because, you know, middle America can't stand when that black penis comes near that white woman. But go ahead and do that now. You've done that on this show. That would be scandalous. Katie is the staid, boring sister, the tomboy, blah, blah, blah. Wouldn't it be just outrageous?
Yes,
she screwed Thomas or Zenday. Something
that
walks in on Katie!
I think it would be cool if Dollar Bill found out in his publication, like, so they were publishing pictures of someone else, but as Bill's looking at it, he's like, wait a minute, is that
of his tabloid photographers comes in and is like, hey, I got some new pics for you to look at, boss. And one of them is Katie in a clinch with Thomas or I'd like Zenday, because to me that's more scandalous, but
yes.
Thomas, to get it on the air, Thomas, you know, come on. But no, I've got to figure out why Quinn is showering outside. It's like, why do you care about that woman's business? Quinn need to go over there and say, bitch, come over to my house one more again, looking and being nosy and stuff.
I'm going to forget
that I done got better, and I'm going to pull out my sword and stab you in that borrowed heart you got. Come over to my house one more time, acting and being nosy.
I will carve that heart out of nosy bitch.
Yeah. Well, speaking of nosy bitches, Mike Gloria has been making The Young and the Restless great again.
God.
She's been nosy. She was in
the Gloria Hour every week.
No, it's not going to be, but she had a good week. I'm getting to the storyline. You're not letting me finish. She and Jack had some interactions, and then she ended up in the sweat room with the guy who was interested in helping Fenmore's. What are you thinking of how Jack's plot and Gloria's manipulations are going?
I'm enjoying Gloria this round. At the end of the day, I like that she had the ingenuity to figure out that Lauren was talking to this guy and went into the steam room to sideline him with some outrageous story. But as for Jack being a part of this, last week really was kind of indifferent to it.
Okay. Jillian, what are you thinking of Devon's storyline now that he's awake?
I'm just going to say, if you said, how do I feel about Gloria, I'll pimp slap you. The Devon storyline, yo, I like Stitch, Hocheck, and Lily. It just makes my heart warm. When she was trying to, he was like, look, girl, you're not going to endanger my patient with your bullshit petty. Then when she did it again, he was like, did I tell you last week you ain't going to do that to him on my watch?
He was like Dr. Mead and Gone with the Wind when you know, Belly was about to die and everybody was wanting to go in there and be like, you know, Scarlett was going to be like, I'm sorry, I was trying to hoe with your cousin husband. And then that old frumpy one was going to be like, I'm sorry, I was telling you about Scarlett trying to hunch Ashley. And he was like, Miss Melly finna die of consumption and y'all bitches is not finna come in.
Stitch and Stitch finally told Lily, look, you know, he tried to tell her on the low, bitch, you want him to know the truth, fine, but if he knows the truth, ain't no telling how he gonna act, cause he got a fucked up head. Like, I love it. I love how Hillary is like still getting one up on them, but you can tell if Devon was in a coma, Neil would slide up to her and be like, you need a ride home. Like, Neil ain't slick. Yep, it's
Neil's so thirsty.
I like the fact, I'm not really thrilled with the amnesia part, although I do know, like, with a head injury that's a common thing. But I would either like him to be faking it or have Hillary start feeding him lies so that
that's
when
a,
Lily
you know,
comes
that's
to
a,
him.
That's a problem with all the soaps, and I think they've all got to get out from under these lazy soap tropes. And, you know, even though we're loving the fact that YNR is back on fire, that is the type of things that the networks need to understand from the network level all down. When you pull a amnesia in the middle of a hot story, or you pull a baby switch, or you pull a doppelganger, for me, it's a grown moment. You take me out of this incredible story. The moment that boy, young man woke up and didn't know who am I, where am I, what am I?
Well, I get that, but that should only be temporary. Like in a
couple of days. No, I'm just saying, but Mike, we've seen it temporary too. It needs to be not anymore. There needs to be a list of stories that these shows just don't do for the foreseeable future. We are in peak TV. This is Netflix era. This is Mad Men post era. There doesn't need to be another goddamn amnesia story in daytime television.
It should have been a situation where either he was in a coma and Hillary took over and fucked and just wrecked shop. Like, she called in that loan for Chancellor.
That would have been such a better story.
She fired Lily and it would have been hot if she called in that loan and Jill paid her, only for her to turn around and be like, only for her to say that I am buying Fenmore's now, for Lauren to be like, say what? Be like, bitch, you ain't in the position to be telling me no, it's your broke ass. I run this motherfucker.
If they would have done that type of story, you know, put Brighton in a coma for 6 weeks and then you can have him like, you know, having dreams and flashes of that night. And then Hillary gets power of attorney like Jillian is talking about, and then just decides to just make sweeping changes to his business. That would be, you know, she, you know, just does all sorts of stuff. Raises the homeowner association fee on Chelsea. You know, she becomes like a black Amanda Woodward. She calls in the loan for,
Chance.
Kind of like the secretary's taking over on 9 to 5.
Yeah, and then
we have that guy tied
up. Exactly.
Yeah.
that Jill, we found out that Jill has tied up Chancellor Manchin and her shares in Fenmore into that loan. And so Hillary snatches up everything. And she's like, Lauren, I'm your partner now. And she's running Chancellor and she's got the house. And then Devon wakes up and there's been all this, you know, Hillary just wreaking havoc. And then he's like, I was going to divorce you anyway. And then, you know, but she's made him millions.
Millions. And he's like, you know what? I'm still mad at that bitch, but she made my pockets fat as a fuck.
Or it's like, if you want to divorce me, fine, but I'm taking half of everything I just helped you acquire.
Yeah.
You know, just something other than amnesia.
I think she's doing that to, like, redo something to Devon, because remember what she said, how she didn't like him being Kay's grandbaby and him being a billionaire. I heard Jill said the other day, Catherine made a mistake giving him them billions. I'm like, what you trying to do on the Lolo, Sally? I don't want no broke brother running on my screen.
Well, this is the thing. He needs to be, you know, and Sarah used to say it all the time when she was on this podcast. You know, it should have been like he should be the Great Gatsby. He should, you know, them having him get married so fast and become just Hillary's okie dokie, baby boo.
No. It's like, why are you doing that, Hillary? Don't do that.
They had one scene of him popping bottles and throwing money, and that was it. You know, and then he went back to being the most boring billionaire ever in the history of billionaires, except maybe Warren Buffett. I mean, come on, Devon. Get some hoe ass in you. Get some Chuck Bass in you. That Gossip Girl really set the tone for me in the modern day of how young, wealthy, obscenely rich people should be behaving. I mean, that little show on a kid network had Chuck Bass having cocaine and sniffing it off the booties of models and all sorts of stuff, which means one day he will run for the president of the United States and win.
I mean, with the Devon thing, with the GC Buzz thing, they could turn that around. I hate GC Buzz. Don't get me wrong. They could just take a page from the Shade Room and make it like a shady blog. Not a tacky blog, but like a shady blog, you know, like comment creeping, like how they do on Baller.
The problem with YNR with their social media blog storylines both times, it's these writers get too into their feelings about the internet, and we see it. You know, when Gene and Shelley did it, it was how many lines of dialogue did we hear about the evil blogosphere? It's like, y'all mad because we all on here clowning y'all. That's why. It's like, oh my God, they just get on there and say all these awful things. And, you know, they did the same thing with GC Buzz. You know, people just get on there and say the most horrible things.
We're still going to do it today.
Well, no, that's not the point. My point is, that is the viewpoint of elitist LA writers about the TMZs and all of that of the world. Your audience, they don't understand. Who do you think is reading those sites every day? You know, middle class and poor people are making, you know, those type of sites.
You see, Empire embraced it by having one of the hottest radio shows in the country. Forget New York, in the country. Clown Jamal, right, but giving him a donkey of the day with Charlemagne. I'm like, they embrace it. You got to turn a negative into a positive. Not this, the evil bloggers are talking about us again, lecture thing.
You know, and they've done it over and over again, and they keep doing those stories with Hillary, you know? But yeah, I mean, I'm excited about the fact that there's some movement on the Ashley front. Michael Logan had a good interview with her. You know, once again, we're at this point where there's a reboot and there are a lot of things are percolating, but Ashley has kind of just still been, Jackie, stop it, Jackie. It's like, come on, can Ashley get something more to do? And I'm hoping that, because she's pointing out to Jack, you know, what's the app called? Lord, Jabogo is what's keeping the company in the black. And Jack is, you know, wanting to use all this money to buy up a department store. And, you know, Jack is once again overreaching. It needs to be that this causes him to stumble and Ashley to take control. I would love to see all of the Abbotts back not all of them, because Tracy, I like her as a novelist. That makes sense for her because it's so tied to her origin story. But I'd love for Billy, Ashley, and Abby to all be back at Jabot. I like the fact that Abby got her little play at Newman, but for me,
Girl.
Newman is Victoria's birthright. It is her birthright as Victor's oldest child. Brash and Sassy should once again become... Victoria should negotiate the sale of Brash and Sassy back to Newman, with her getting a sizable amount of stock in the parent company and the CEO position, because that is the origin story. If at the end of Gone with the Wind, they suddenly decided one of the frumpy younger daughters got Tara instead of Scarlet, then I'm going to not be satisfied as a reader. You've told me since Heather Tom was 15 on that show that she was cut from her father's cloth, that she was born to inherit Newman Enterprises. It is her birthright. It is her legacy, much like Ewing Oil was JR's. I want Victoria running Newman Enterprises with Brash and Sassy under it. They need to get off of that silly little set where she and Billy are sitting in front of each other with their laptops like they're in high school. They need to get her back at the Newman set.
They have money for it too, because did you see that set for Dylan and so-called?
Yes. I'm done with the whole we can't afford new set. Yes. You know, build a new, you know, and the thing of it is, you don't need a new set for them. You just get her back over there at the Newman sets. You have, you know, Abby, you know, Victor tells Abby, isn't this wonderful, my baby? Both of my girls are going to be here. And Abby is like, yeah, this is great. And Abby gets an attitude because she's been like, I've been here being loyal to you, Dad. And this one comes back and Nicholas comes back. And she's like, you know what? I'm done. And then she goes back to Jabot, because I always think of Abby more as an abbot.
Yeah.
And you know, then you have...
They'll call him that loan that Jackass owes.
Exactly. Jack took the company. He was only able to take Jabot back by borrowing from Abby. That needs to come into play. And then you have Jack, Ashley jockeying for power at Jabot, and Billy and Abby for the next generation. And then eventually, hopefully, you can bring on Kyle. But then at Newman Enterprises, there's Victoria, Nicholas, and Noah. Noah needs to get either, if you're going, this is the thing with Noah, either bring him into the Newman fold or make him Bobby Santangelo from the Lucky Santangelo series, where he was a high-end club promoter who wore designer suits and who ran the hottest clubs in town. If you're going to make him a club promoter, get him out of that stupid bartender t-shirt, put him in a swanky suit, and make the underground, you know, stop using that damn PowerPoint display to show that ugly ass club and make us believe this is the hottest club in Genoa City. Or have his father say, all right, my boy, you want to, I will give you what you want. You want to be a club promoter? I want you to run Top of the Tower. And then he comes over there and he becomes like what Felicia Gallant was on Another World with Tops. You know, Noah is running Top of the Tower. You damn right. Because it's my shit. And I'm a prince of the world. Anytime I feel like
you like to eat that Tops.
I ain't got to ease nothing. So, Noah is over. You know, Noah needs to be running Top of the Tower, and he needs to be a boss. He needs to be a hotshot club promoter, and there needs to be storylines about somebody trying to push heroin through Top of the Tower, and
police story with, you know, if you got to add the cops in there and stuff like that, that would be cool.
You know, Mike, there's so much other glitzy, glamorous stuff than, you know, and Nick has got, okay, here's some other stuff too. Nick has got to do more than feed these babies porridge now.
Mm-hmm.
Can't be just said that's cute and all, but I don't want to see these babies some porridge every day.
I understand that they're trying to show for both Newmans that it's hard being a single parent, but get out of here.
Got $500 million.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, get out of here. If they were like, if their last name was like Newsome or something, or Nestlebaum or whatever.
They would have brought that baby a governess the day he brought her home.
Yeah,
Mike.
They finally have the governesses. But, you know, that's cute and all, but we need to get them back in action.
Yeah.
Mike, what are you thinking of General Hospital with Naxie's upcoming wedding and the fact that their New Year's one fell apart? Do you think they'll actually tie the knot?
That's the question.
Yes, I do think they'll tie the knot, but I also think that Claudette will come back either at the nick of time to spoil that wedding or shortly after, because we know, unlike Nathan, who didn't ever think that Claudette really didn't kill herself. Lulu was the one that informed him that Valentine was probably behind her death. So Lulu is smarter than Nathan.
No, she's not.
I think they're going to get married? I don't really. I'm not invested in their... I really don't. I've said this before. I'm not a huge Maxi fan, and I see no heat between them whatsoever.
Oh, I don't think they have chemistry.
Whatever magic they had has been completely washed out. And
you sit on the sideline. Don't you ever disparage Maxi Jones? Hell.
When the news came out last week that Brandon Barash was going to be on Timeless, I was like, damn it, why can't he be back on General Hospital? Because I want him with Lulu.
Really with Maxi, though.
No, I said because I want him with Lulu.
But what's that got to do with whether Max is
because viable? He always sweeps into town and causes problems for both Lulu and Maxi in terms of upsetting things.
Well, I'm sure he's happier with his Timeless gig than coming back. What a Frank's patented. We're going to pay you $3.25 to come back for 2 months.
And he's always a fugitive. I mean, if they ever catch him, he has to go.
Yeah, I mean, if they came to him and said, hey, we have a storyline for you, and we have, we want to make you a significant lead on the show like Bob Guza had him. Like, you know, you thought Johnny was Sonny's heir apparent. I mean, he really was. They could have rewritten that show around him. But, you know, no, these actors, I mean, if Frank came calling and it was another, the same old, we're going to come back. And have you kidnap the black girl and set on fire again. It's like, why do you want to come back and do that? Why? He would kill Scotty Granger.
He'd be good at Scotty Granger.
Jillian, Sam and Jason have been sleuthing, but have you enjoyed it? I know you're a J-Sam fan, but are you enjoying it?
I mean, it gives them something to do, and it gives Jason something to do other than Franco! Like, it gives them something to do. So,
I've liked Jason a little bit more in the last couple weeks since he's been.
I found them endearing. I think they are like a young heart to heart. I think that their detective work has been charming. It keeps them in play. We know Sam is a ride or die, but the fact that she's pregnant has made it to where she can't do a lot of the, you know, action stuff. So that's why Curtis is in the mix.
I like Curtis and Jason's little bromance. I kind of like it.
And I have evolved into like, I'm sort of a Sam fan. I'm not like, she's much more rootable now than I ever felt in the past, but I do still get my chuckles when she gets made fun of on the show. So I love, because they are really smart with their detective work, but they're just off. You know, it's like they think they have it figured out and they don't. So Sam marches into Ava's penthouse. Yeah. And is like,
that was awesome.
The truth. I know the truth. I know that the Jeromes were really behind this. And Ava gets shook like, damn, this little bitch figuring stuff out. And she's like, and I know that there's a woman involved, and I know it's you. And Ava just bust out laughing in her face. They gave me everything. I was like, yes, for the Liz fans. She was like, ah! And she told Sam, really, Sam, don't ever change. And Sam is like, what? I figured it out. No, it's you. Ava's like,
I could use a little bit more energy from the two of them, but I have been enjoying them a little bit more.
What, Ava and Sam, or?
No, Sam and Jason.
Jamie, what are you thinking of Fritz?
Frizz,
whatever.
Fritz is some man in Switzerland.
He's on Scandal.
Luke, you know what I think about Frizz.
Well, you were just talking about earlier getting in debates over stuff, so I figured you had some latest thing.
I will give you the summary of my thoughts on it. Look, when I get on YouTube and I look up the YouTube clip of the 15 flights of stairs, I get in my feelings just like everybody else. I still get in my feelings when I look at Cruise and Eden clips too, but they ain't coming back. And Jason and Liz are not coming back in that form or fashion. You know, I was a huge fan of Liaison with Steve Burton in the role. Under Billy Miller, they were all right. They were just all right to me. I wasn't trying to be called a fat 300-pound, 500-pound monster black man over Billy and Becky like I was. I was ready to fight judo over Steve Burton and Becky. I just felt they were all right under, you know, I felt like Billy and Becky had all right chemistry. So for me, it did have a lot to do with the characters. I'm going to just be real here. I feel Billy Miller and Kelly Monaco have better chemistry than Billy Miller and Rebecca Herbst. Rebecca Herbst seems a little too... Liz, you know, as Liz, she seems more sophisticated than Jason. I'll just leave it at that. She doesn't seem, you know, she's not a ride-or-die. Liz is not a ride-or-die type character. And, you know, I don't think she would...
I got 50 kids to think
about. You know, and Liz does not... You know, Liz always did not, you know, she didn't like the fact that Sonny and Carly's mess would come between her and Jason's relationship. Sam is more, it's annoying, but I got you on that. Sam is more, and I see why so many, you know, why they're popular with a lot of the urban audience, because Sam is a ride or die. She's like, look, I got you. You know, yeah, Carly get on my nerves sometime, but I'm not going to make a big deal about it. Whereas Liz was more like, if that heifer comes storming in my house again and you go out there with her one more time to help save the world, we done. You know, I get it. But for me, the last 5 or 6 years, even with Ron, when they would try to do liaison, they would have Liz do stuff out of character to have her get the short end of the stick. Oh, I'm going to get Jason back for a time, but I'm not going to let him know that that baby is really his. So we know you messing her up again, man. You know at the end he's going to be all, why you didn't tell me that baby was mine? I'm mad at you. I'm going back to Sam. And then this last time, oh, I'm going to get him back, and I'm going to get to hunch him. Ooh, I'm going to get to throw that back. I'm going to get to make up for lost time. We together. But you got amnesia, and I know you really Jason, and you ain't really Jake. And so when this shit come out on me, I'm going to be the town pariah. If that is the only liaison I get where she gets him back through some kind of lie or treachery, that it's just basically prolonging the inevitable moment when he growls at her, I can't believe you did this. Yeah, I know I'm a serial killer and have killed up a bunch of people, but I'm mad at you for lying, and I'm going back to Sam. And what? I'm tired of that. And that's all we've gotten for the last few years. And, you know, them bringing back the slow baby was not a conversation, you know. Oh, look, Jake is back. Here, Liz, you get this baby, but the man gonna get to go with Sam. Who cares? Now we have Franco, who, yes, I go to Daytime Confidential or just Google Jamie Giddens and Franco, and you will see I was the ring-tailed leader of hating that. I wrote 85 blog posts about how dumb it was to make Roger Haworth Franco. But the fact of the matter is they did. It's over. It's done with. And
well, maybe now that ABC has the rights back, they can
fix
that.
No, he is a great actor. You will continue to really water down and dismantle the fabric of this show if you even advocate for anything as asinine as that. That is absurd. Again, this is peak TV. This is where I am as a soap critic. I am done separating evil twins and people coming back as other people from anything you would see on The Good Wife. Because it used to be that we watched shows based on times of day. Now this world of apps and everything else, you just have to have, okay, these are my favorite shows. I like 30 shows. This is how I'm going to divide my time watching them. And if I have to pick between Luke Cage being buck naked and pounding out Jessica, whatever her name is, or on my DVR, or seeing, you know, the Reading the Bold and the Beautiful summary, today Liam talks about how upset he is about Steffi. I'm finna watch Luke Cage. I'm just gonna tell you right now, I'm really just gonna watch some CNN, because that's what I've been obsessed with lately again. Damn you, Donald Trump. But you know, it's peak TV, so we don't have time to, no, they don't even need to be thinking about, you know, oh, maybe we should bring him back and make him Todd again. Who cares? Todd was a rapist too, so Todd can't hunt Elizabeth either. Or fans will get mad about that, because Todd, you know, actually did rape Marty on camera. You know, whereas with Franco, they did a retcon, and a lot of fans are like, we don't give a damn. Franco is still a rapist, and I get that. And in real life, yes, I totally agree with you. If he made a woman think he raped her and got all up on top of her. He is a sexual predator. He molested Sam. There's no denying that. But, and this is, and I do feel that this, what I'm about to say, should happen. I do think that moving forward, there should be a treaty, a daytime soap opera treaty that says we will never again try to make a romantic lead out of someone who has committed a sexual assault. Now, that's going to mean male and female. I do believe that at this point in the game, because of everything we know now about rape and about how many times victims don't, the statistics about statistics not coming forward, of victims not coming forward, I do think that there needs to be a responsibility. I'm not saying Daytime never needs to tell another rape story, because there have been many responsible rape stories. But I do feel that this whole making them into viable romantic leads moving forward needs to stop. But that being said, they're not going to fire one of the best actors working in the genre who would immediately get snapped up by one of their rival soaps. And the only other choice would be, oh, let's make him someone else, which further damages, in my opinion, the credibility of the show. If they suddenly said, oh, he's Tommy Hardy. Well, no, you can't be with Liz anyway.
No, I wasn't meaning that at all.
No, but you would. But your suggestion, well, now they have the rights back. Bring him back as Todd. Well,
no. My thing is, like, and I've been kind of saying that, like, these two actors have amazing chemistry. There is no denying that. I personally don't like Franco, but I understand what people see in it, and I also understand what people don't see, what they don't like, and what you know, there are other characters on this show that are as bad or worse than Franco. So I can't hang the whole criminal thing on him, because he is doing pretty much. I mean, Sonny's a killer, Ava's a killer, all running around free. You know, so if everything is created, if this is all created equal, that nobody pays for any crimes, then what he's there, there's really nothing.
Here's what I have noticed about General Hospital that I find really kind of, you know, Bob Guza should really chuckle. I don't think he gives a shit or even pays attention, but I really think Bob Guza would have a smirk if he knew what had happened since he left. Because one of the main reasons Bob Guza got fired was because ABC felt the show was too dark, and the fans felt the show was too dark. Now, when Ron and Frank came on, they made it a more frothy action adventure campy version of GH early on. You know, they had the villains, they had the water story and things like that, and Jerry Jax was menacing, but it was kind of like Batman in the 60s as opposed to Gotham. You know, it was, we had the villains, we had bad stuff happening, but it was kind of fun and tongue-in-cheek and frothy. And then all of a sudden Ron got darker than Guza, because before, people hated Sonny because he was a mobster who hung AJ on a meat hook and stole his son, and Jason killed a bunch of villains, you know, that were never really beloved by the canvas, so they got to be Robin Hood. You got to have this whole, oh, well, Sonny and Jason are bad guys, but they're so good with the women, and, you know, we never cared about anyone that they hurt. But then Ron had him kill AJ in cold blood. And he's still the lead of the show. The lead of the show killed a Quartermain in cold blood. Ava, a female lead on the show, killed Connie in cold blood, shot Olivia in cold blood.
She's forgiven.
You know, I mean, this is, so to me, it's like, if you want to have a dialogue about General Hospital overall and the need to really get back to telling hospital-based storylines and ceasing on the really ugly, violent stories that have happened, that, in my opinion, GH is uglier and more violent. I'm enjoying a lot of it, I have to say, but the Julexis story is darker and uglier than what Guza was doing, even though I think it's a good story because it's compelling.
And it's psychological, which I like.
But in terms of that whole huge gripe that we always see, that Guza and Jill Farren Phelps made the show too dark, I feel the stories are much darker than they were. So I don't really think the network, because that's the thing, these, you know, the networks have to be held accountable with all of these shows. The network doesn't know what it really wants, because, you know, you got rid of writers for making the show dark, yet now you have a story with a heroine falling back in love with a man slowly but surely that put a dagger to her throat. And yes, I'm enjoying it. That's the thing about me, but I like dark stories. I'm talking, when I'm saying this, these are not things I have a problem with because I grew up, I love mob dramas. So for me, I'm like, okay, but it just, I see it as hypocritical with a lot of the fan base because a lot of my, you know, the people who used to be, who used to love me because I was a liaison fan, they're really upset that Liz is dating a psychopath serial killer. And I'm like, well, y'all, we was swooning watching YouTube videos set to Bleeding Love with, when she was in love with Jason, and he was a hitman, y'all. He was a hitman. And people are like, but he didn't kill anyone we cared about. Oh, okay. Well, you know, I know this is off screen and it's fiction, but if we're going to make this a moral thing, I'm sure somebody cared about Jason's villains. I mean, victims. You know, he was a hitman and we swooned over it. I swooned over Sonny and Brenda. He was a mob boss. They don't, you know, mob bosses are not, you know, they don't have hearts of gold in real life. That's where I think it's like either we make a decision to stop, you know, trying to make these shows moralistic because people watch Dexter and, you know, he was a serial killer. He had love interests. He had this and that. Ray Donovan is a really dark show, really dark character. But those are cable shows. But a lot of the same people who watch Daytime watch that. But Daytime is still held to this almost puritanical standard. But it's hypocritical at times. It's like, your avatar has a picture of Steve Burton and Becky Herbst, but you're upset that she's with Franco. Jason was a killer, just like Franco. He wasn't a rapist. And someone, you know, some person tweeted, and, you know, I had to think about that. I don't know who you are, but I want to give you credit, that because this is a genre aimed at women, rape is an uglier crime for Daytime than murder. Yeah. Now, as, you know, and that's the thing. I had to think. I'm like, okay, I have to remind myself, I'm not a rape victim. I am a man. And I'm thinking, you know, again, this is just in my thinking, but that gave me pause and it made me think, okay, I'm not a woman, so let me think about that. I'm thinking if I had the choice between, personally, me, Jamie, being murdered and raped, I guess in my head, I'm like, well, you survive one. So I never got that why murderers were treated with, you could redeem a murderer in Daytime easier than a rapist. That's always been the case. But I get it now because that's a violation that, you know, you're powerless in that violation. Whereas I guess you would rather, in a lot of cases, choose death. I mean, the fact that we're discussing this about things that are supposed to entertain us in the daytime is a huge problem. Because if they really just decided to make General Hospital a hospital-based show, basing it off of their hugely successful primetime series, Grey's Anatomy, and I'm not saying get rid of the non-hospital characters because you wouldn't have anybody, but this would take a while to do this. Really zero back in on the hospital, tie the non-hospital characters to the hospital in unique ways. Alexis becomes General Hospital's lead counsel, so that is why she's already there. We already have Laura on the board. Go ahead and up the ante, because at a lot of businesses these days, the chairman of the board is also the CEO. So make Laura the CEO and the chairman of the board of the of General Hospital. Make it a for-profit hospital with Laura running it.
Sunny has stakes because of the Stonecase Memorial.
Sunny starts really wanting to push his weights. Sunny really wants to start being more involved in the Stonecase Memorial Wing, which puts him at conflict with Hamilton Finn, because Hamilton Finn is their infectious diseases specialist at this point. So you have Hamilton Finn say, yeah, I understand that you've, well, no, I'm talking with too high of a voice. I understand that you have, you know, donated a lot of money, but yeah, this hospital no longer wants your mob money. So he's basically saying, you know, so you put Sonny in, and then Sonny, in Sonny fashion, is like, who does this punk think he is?
Sonny throws up in Hamilton Finn's face, bitch, I gave you those drugs that you needed to make your ass better.
Exactly. But, you know, so you have a conflict there, and then maybe Hamilton Finn starts looking at Carly in a new light, you know, because Carly's all mad once she finds out that Sonny hunched on blah girl, you know, and then, you know, make Hayden the...
Wait. What did you just call her?
Blah girl. Blah. B-L-A-H. And then, you know, make Hayden the publicist. So that's why she's there. You know, Hayden is running publicity. Or, you know, make Hayden the CFO, since her father, that's cute, since her father was a Bernie Madoff type.
What would happen with Tracy?
Tracy's just on the board. No, and ELQ, and also, sorry guys and girls out there, I'm finna drop some tea. Tracy ain't gonna be there much longer. Jane Elliott is getting ready to give her to go. She is ready to shoot the deuces. She's about to pull a Susan Flannery. I hope they can convince her to change her mind, but everything I'm hearing says Jane Elliott is about to go. So, you know, that's a whole nother can of worms that they gotta do. They gotta really figure out who's gonna
be,
you know,
the head of the Quartermains.
The role of Angelica Devereaux is now being played.
Okay, final thought, Jamie?
My final thought is...
You had a lot.
Well, yeah.
One final thought, not a lot of final thoughts.
Oh, Gloria then! Gloria! Let's talk about Gloria! Final thought. Does that satisfy you?
That does. Jillian, final thought?
My final thought is, yo, Nancy Lee Grand, she played the hell out of those scenes on Friday, didn't she? When she came in there, when she's like, I don't know how to say this. I'm just so ashamed to say it. I'm an alcoholic. And she started spilling her tea. It was like, my man tried to kill me. Then I backed over him, child. And then I let my grandbaby almost burn up. I was like, ooh, I felt that for her. I was like, oh.
I was like, she says something like, you probably don't know who I am. And they're all like, oh, yeah, we know who you are.
Yeah, but she's like, ha-ha, but y'all can't snitch on me, though. Oh, my God.
Okay.
You know, because I go to Overeaters Anonymous. Yes, I do. And what? I think if you confess to a crime, they can tell on you. If not, I can go confess to most stuff.
No. If she did murder or something like that, they'd have to tell on her. Since Julian's walking around and shit, they can't tell on her, so it's good.
Okay, Mike, final thought.
Running over somebody with a car is mighty bad.
If they're alive, yes.
Mike,
if they're dead, yes, but they're alive, so no.
Let me see. I don't believe that. You don't know it's the truth. Alcohol,
it is the truth.
See, if someone confessed, just a minute. Alcoholics Anonymous. Because there's a whole lot of crimes where people walk around after it. The legal status of criminal confession in AA. AA encourages members to admit. Come on. No, I don't want to sign up for your newsletter.
But the thing is, it is anonymous. And if you admit to it, then you're outing that person for being an alcoholic. I think that's part of the thing, too.
Well, you're also outing yourself and anybody else.
But I'm just, the legal battle that ensued shed new light on issues of anonymity and blah, 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 blah. A ping pong between courts had lawyers bantering on such thing as cleric. Well, this is too long to give me. I just needed a freaking.
Yeah, because there's also priest involvement. It's considered a somewhat religious.
We're going to let you rap in just a minute. Can we finish the...
I haven't said anything.
You were about to say you're closing.
I haven't got to Mike yet.
Just a second. It's taking too long for me. I'm trying to... Oh, well, we'll table it for next week. Dang it, they're giving me too many essays to read.
Okay, well, Mike, final thought?
Yes, if Dorit on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills can have one nanny for each child, there's no reason why Victoria and Nick can't do the same thing either.
Who is Dorit?
Get them kids off the screen. I'm tired of all those children.
I'm surprised you're watching Real Housewives.
Yeah, well, it happens.
Oh, my. I cannot believe
it. It's Eileen Davidson and Lisa Rinna. I can't help it.
1970s era soap purist.
I am. Okay, I don't mind the odd kid once in a while, but Faith taking over, and then I got to deal with Victoria not being able to manage life as a single mother, and then Nicholas with his 18 children.
I understand what they're trying to do and what they're trying to say. I like what the message. However, the Newmans, who have $500 million apiece, should not have that. Nick should have the office come to him. Give me a damn break.
Okay. According to the AA spokesperson in this story about some crazy woman who had a naked twister party with her daughter and the police got involved. There are no rules or regulations governing the behavior of AA members. What's said in meetings is held in confidence in the spirit of our tradition of anonymity, but we're aware of situations where criminal activity has been shared and members have felt compelled for their own reasons to speak to authorities, and there are no repercussions for people who ignore AA guidelines, the spokesman said. So, yes, those people can say, Alexis,
oh my God.
Ho, we finna go tell that you
I ran have a feeling
hood.
So Judgment Day. No, so Judgment Day when God's like, sorry, sir. No, no, let me give you my receipt. Let me you gonna really argue with him on Judgment Day.
Now that we've had
no,
that PSA.
I know I'm right. Yes, I am. You are. You
Now that we've had that PSA, we would encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DCConfidential. Jamie, where can they find you on Twitter?
At AA.
Jillian, where can they find you?
I love the booze, but I can handle my booze. But I've been
Oh, my God. I'm like, wow, really? They can find me at my skin on Twitter. What?
Mike, where can they find you?
At MPG24 on Twitter.
They can find me in the crime-infested 5th District.
They know where to find you.
Donald Trump say I live in the slums.
I know! Buckheads in the slums,
I'm like, what? I'm like, are you kidding me, dude?
Until next time, so long.
Bye.